Welcome along. All right, now, the Irish Times, there was an interesting report in the Irish Times that said the government may need to consider a complete overhaul, or overhaul, should I say, of the care system for the state's most vulnerable children due to its current failings. The Department of Children officials have privately warned, they say, the existing system of special care where a small number of children at risk of serious harm are detained for their own safety by court order may no longer be fit for purpose. This is according to an internal department briefing. Now, Freedom of Information documents received by Pater Tobin from Aintu show that the state care system for children, according to him, is collapsing. The Green Party, he says, is radically failing the most vulnerable children in the country. And there will be a tribunal of investigation into the actions of this government. I believe there'll be tribunals for many reasons, but this is just one of them. And Pater Tobin joins me on the line. Pater, good afternoon to you.
Hello, Niall. Thanks for having us on.
Pater, okay, these documents, firstly, I mean, what raised your concerns, first of all, as to why you wanted these documents under Freedom of Information?
Well, we've been tracking what's happening in Tuzla for about 3 or 4 years now at this stage. It's an area that doesn't get much coverage by the mainstream media really at all, but there is incredible stuff happening. So first of all, this year, 100,000 children will be referred to Tuzla. Now, to put that in context, about 57,000 children will sit in leading cert this year, and 100,000 will actually be referred to Tuzla. So there's something really serious happening in general society around this particular issue in the first place. And secondly, that number has increased radically since about 4 or 5 years ago. It used to be about 40,000, 50,000, and now it's jumped to about...
Just to interrupt you, just, you know, for clarification, what are the reasons generally children are referred to Tuzla for? What are the general reasons they're referred to Tuzla for?
Well, usually children are referred to Tuzla if children are believed to be in a situation that's detrimental to themselves.
Okay, dysfunctional parents, alcoholic
parents.
Some
kind of dysfunctional situation happening within in their lives. Now, there'll be people that would be referred to Tuzla, which would be bogus referrals too. Do you know what I mean? So you have a neighbour maybe referring a neighbour's child just out of spite rather than a reality as such. So not all those referrals are real, but we know that 100,000 are considered real enough by Tuzla to be accounted for as a referral. So that's the first thing. Second thing, issue that we've been noticing is there's actually been a lot of deaths of children who are known to the state's services. So, but 201 children have died just in the last 10 years.
Wow.
You know, dozens of those died through murders, through suicides, through drug overdoses, through accidents and car accidents. So very high numbers of really dark situations happening to children. The third issue that really struck us was that Tuzla were starting to rely on what they call special accommodation units. And they're units that are not regulated in every situation and where the staff are not necessarily vetted. So because the pressure was so difficult on Tuzla, they were struggling to get accommodation for children who needed residential care. And they started to go to companies who weren't, you know, vetting their staff or who weren't fully regulated. And we know that some of those children were going missing. So in the month of April or January this year, about 20 children went missing from the state unregulated special emergency accommodations. And we know that UCD has done a study on this too, which said that some of these children are being preyed upon by gangs involved in sexual exploitation.
I spoke to MacPaths recently in relation to this. I interviewed them and they had done a lot of research into this. And they talked about, you know, these gangs or individuals who would go to Tuzla, and because these are teenagers, they can't keep them detained. They have to let them out. And some of these individuals, they have been caught on numerous occasions, you know, were offering rewards to maybe young teenage girls, obviously in return for sex or whatever it is, you know, and then returning them that night back to Tuzla again or back to their accommodation. This is seemingly quite common, or more common than it should be.
Yeah, so like, think about this for a second. The state is in loco parentis, okay? The state is operating in a situation where it is in charge of children. And yet the state is admitting that these children are going missing on a regular basis and that, you know, really dark things are happening to those children. Like, there has been a case of a child who was found in a brothel a year after she went missing from one of these locations. So, you know, this obviously is incredible stuff happening. I believe if it was happening in the 60s or the 50s, the likes of Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael and the Greens would be jumping up and down calling for you know, a massive state apology and a tribunal of investigation. But the worst thing about it is that this is happening in real time. It's happening now. And even though if the necessary changes were made, we could resolve it, the government seemed to be not even interested in it.
I was going to say that because Roger Gorman has been asked about this now by individuals on the street while he's been harangued on numerous occasions. But he tends to ignore these questions as to why children are going missing, you know, in state accommodation. What has his response been to this? Has he had an official response to this?
Well, first of all, I think Roger Gorman has been a disaster in this situation. I think the situation alone is enough for Roger Gorman's resignation. Now, when I speak to people within the sector, they'll tell me that Roger really doesn't know what's happening, that he doesn't seem to show much of an interest, that he hasn't got much of a drive to resolve this. Think about the Judge Sims, a retired judge who lifted his head above the parapets to raise this issue. You know, he sent Roger Gorman 4 documents. He anonymized those documents so the individuals in those documents couldn't be recognized. And he actually got permission from the families of the children who were in those documents. He sent those documents to Roger Gorman, and Roger Gorman shredded 3 of those documents without even reading them, saying that he had a responsibility to fulfill GDPR law on these issues. Now, I would ask him, where his responsibility to fulfill his response, you know, where's his responsibility to fulfill, you know, helping the children?
Yeah, the moral responsibility to sort out the problem.
Yeah,
so basically he deleted the documents or shredded the documents.
The documents. And not only that, his department complained to Judge Sims' department that he had the temerity to actually raise this. So they actually sought to shut him up and send a message to anybody else who wanted to ring the warning bell on this particular issue. I believe if these children were from the leafy suburbs of where these ministers actually live, I believe that actually there would be, this would be on the front page of every single newspaper. It would be on prime time on a regular basis. It would be all over the news, and the government would be acting. But the truth is that many of these families are from, or many of these children are from very, very broken or dysfunctional families or working class families, and they don't have a voice. And as a result, you know, the government's middle class government can actually forget about them. Would actually,
and why aren't a lot of these children? Why they're not in foster care? Should they not be in foster care?
Well, many of these children, in other words, the first line of support would be foster care families, and that's where most of the children go. But there would be some children who would be of have such difficulties that foster care is simply not suitable for them.
So then it's up to the state.
Residents. So how this has happened is there's 3 type of providers for residential care for these children. There's private companies who are regulated and do very good work. There's state organizations that provide it, and then there's what they call kind of the voluntary sector. So these are kind of charitable organizations that have been helping in these areas for the last while. And they need, obviously, decent funding to provide this, but they also need to be able to provide a decent wage to staff and decent pensions and contributions, etc., for those staff to work. Now, the state, believe it or not, has created a very high bar in terms of qualifications. And don't get me wrong, I think that high qualifications are necessary in this. But what has actually started to happen is that young people with really high qualifications have come out of college and found themselves looking after really difficult circumstances of children that are probably only 2 or 3 years, 4 years younger than them. And you know, they've got burnt out really, really quickly in this situation. They may have been physically harmed or attacked in it. And as a result, they leave very, very quickly the work situation. Now, I would say that, yes, we should have high qualifications, but many older people who maybe raised families, who maybe, you know, been a coach in the local football club for 10 or 15 years, who have life skills, you know, that you earn with getting, you know, going through life. I think getting some of those people into those roles with necessary qualifications too would actually see people stay in those roles longer and on decent wages as well. But because the government hasn't really paid any attention to wages, pensions, or, you know, getting the necessary work place planning in place, there's a very limited supply of these residential beds. And then the government has gone on to really kind of charlatan companies who have staff who are not trained, who are not regulated. Some of them will just be in apartment blocks and, you know, or hotel rooms. And we would hear stories where, you know, hotel staff have been asked to keep an eye on children while they're looking for staff to come onto the next shift and stuff. And, you know, I just think that here we are, children from the worst possible difficult situations being told by the states that they're going to be brought into a sanctuary, actually being brought into a location that is not a sanctuary, that they're actually being lost, and then finding themselves again exposed to the worst difficult situations possible.
Where are these children that are gone missing, and we can only approximate the amount of children that have gone missing from state care. Well, I mean, I know this sounds like a stupid question, but where are they? I mean, when you say they've gone missing, I'm assuming they're not dead. So I'm assuming they've been taken advantage of. You mentioned one was found working, a young girl, teenage girl, obviously found working in a brothel. Where are the rest of them? Are they kind of farmed out to somebody? Are they with families? Are they with people who don't know them? Are they? I mean, where do they think we are?
It's the whole gamut. Some of them could have fallen in love with a person and gone to live with a person. You know, some of them could have gone back to a parent maybe that they shouldn't have gone back to. Some of them could be living on the streets. You know what I mean? Some of them could be. So, you know, some of them then could be in situations where they are being sexually exploited, mm-hmm. Low wages as well.
I mean, as I said, I spoke to my Pats, they said to me there was organized gangs of people, you know, who are involved in these kind of rings, paedophile rings, I assume, or whatever. And, you know, taking advantage of young girls, offering them jewellery or handbags or hotel stays and all sorts of things in exchange for sexual favours, and then dropping them back to Tulsa again afterwards, or whatever the agency who has them or is looking after them. I mean, they're shocking stories. And when I spoke to Math Pats, it was actually shocking to listen to in relation to that. So, but here we are in a situation where you think we would have learned, you know, from the 1960s. You know, we were only talking recently about the mother and baby homes and everything else, but we've actually learned nothing at all. So this is another tribunal and another redress system, probably in 30 years' time.
Yeah, and you know, there's a really important issue here in that we need to get to a situation where we're finding out societally why is it that so many families are in a situation where children are in a difficult place. That's the first thing. You know, how do we support mother and fathers to stay together where possible to be able to raise their children? How do we create the financial supports necessary where possible for people to be able to raise their children? You know, we have to ask ourselves, what did COVID do to many of these children? You know, these really long shutdowns and lockdowns where children were you know, basically trapped maybe in familial situations that were very difficult for them. You know, what have we learned from that in terms of making sure that that doesn't happen?
Yeah,
again,
absolutely.
We have to find out, like, what is social media doing and drugs are doing to these children? So we have to do a job of work to try and stem the increasing flow of children into this situation in the first place. And then secondly, we have to make sure that we actually properly have a government that has an interest in these children.
But at the very least, a Minister for Children who actually understands what the problem is, because clearly we have a Minister for Children at the moment that doesn't. And as you mentioned already, he should resign.
There's a lack of technical knowledge, technical understanding. And in my view, that can only come from a lack of interest, because like Roger Gorman is a smart individual. He's a highly educated individual. You know, he's been a lecturer in a third level college. You know, the not being able to get to grips with the technical details of this has to be down to a lack of interest. And, you know, the fact that the governments are just, you know, sitting on their hands. And I see this a lot now, in fairness. I see in difficult situations, ministers do their best not to open Pandora's boxes to try and get to the end of their term in that particular role without actually having to deal with massive problems. It's the same with the prison service at the moment. The prison service is in a mess currently throughout the country. Helen McEntee won't deal with it because it's a Pandora's box, and she doesn't want to have to deal with it.
They're going to have to start dealing with all of these things when they come back from their holidays, of course. And I'm sure you'll be raising this question with Roger Gorman when you come back too. But I mean, I have never in all my years of, you know, dealing with politics and talking about politics, heard so many people calling for the resignation of two individuals so much, and nothing actually being done about it. Both Helen McEntee and Roderick O'Gorman, the way they're dealing with primarily the immigration chaos, the housing chaos is obviously not out of their control, but the two are linked intrinsically. Pather, listen, thank you for doing that. I know you're going to bring that up probably in the Dáil when the Dáil comes back after the summer recess. And of course, you've got the election on the way too, so they're going to be promising everybody the world. But in another news, by the way, just before you go, Pather, you had a good pop at the HSE over their suggestion that it's not just women that get pregnant, that possibly men do too. I mean, this was covered in Grip Media yesterday where they said you ripped the HSE. I mean, you were quite angry about this idea, because I suppose when you're looking at the people who are responsible for our physical and mental well-being in the country, the health service, and they're telling us basically to play into an ideology. Is that what you're suggesting?
Yeah, so I think the HSE's policy is incredibly problematic. So first and foremost, saying that a man can get pregnant and have a baby is problematic because it's false, right? That's really important to say. Secondly, it's problematic because, you know, the health service is designed in large parts to be able to provide really life-saving health services to women. And if the health service doesn't know what a woman is, it is not going to be able to do that job properly. Secondly, when it communicates to women, if it confuses its message to women, that message will get lost, it won't be understood, and because of that confusion, people will suffer. So Cervical Check, for example, also made this point that, you know, when they were advertising and creating leaflets for women, they put people with a cervix instead of the word woman. Now, we know that cervical cancer is a killer, and if we're going to confuse our message to women in terms of availing of Cervical Check by actually using terms such as person with a cervix, but then there's a danger that it won't be understood by the target group of people. And if it's not understood, it won't be utilized. And if it's not utilized, people could actually have advanced...
The science and biology is the only people with cervixes are women. It was actually funny because the other night I was talking to a sex educator on the air on the radio, and she obviously talks to people about their sexual problems. And she started referring to, you know, when people with a penis come to me, and I'm going, can you not just say man? You know what I mean? When people, so, I mean, you are right. It confuses the message. And the very idea that an organization that builds itself and has a foundation on science and biology, because that's how we deal with health problems, through science and biology, is dealing with things through ideology, is just bonkers.
Yeah. But this is true because, you know, this is a political position that the HSE have taken. So the HSE should be politically neutral. It should be purely on the basis of fact and science and biology. And, you know, currently that's not the case. Mm. Secondly, you know, there's danger here in terms of the whole idea of, let's say, gender affirmation. Most European countries' health services now are reversing at speed from the cul-de-sac of gender ideology because they see how dangerous that can be in terms of leading children down the path of...
The NHS did reverse all of that. But now with Keir Starmer back in again, it looks like he wants to bring it all back again. Now, of course, Keir Starmer struggled on the BBC when he was asked on numerous occasions what a woman was, and he didn't seem to know. So that's a huge problem when the leader of the country doesn't even know what a woman is. But here's the problem, Potter. It's not just the HSE. You're banging your head off a wall. Because if you go to most politicians sitting in that building with you in the Dáil and ask them what a woman is, they won't be able to answer your question. They'll all pander over it and they'll all waffle. We heard Odo Brin from Sinn Féin only recently when he was asked what a woman was, and he starts waffling about ideology or not identity and what people identify as, and they just will not answer the question.
Yeah, no, I think the tolerance for this from the general public has collapsed in recent times. And I think, you know, people very, very clearly recognize the importance of women's safe spaces, for example. You know, the Olympics just gone by showed the importance of women being able to compete fairly and equally in terms of women's sports and how that's corrupted. And, you know, when you have men competing in those sports. So I think people's tolerance for the political establishment's pandering on this issue has collapsed. And I think, you know, it's one of the reasons why Sinn Féin's vote has collapsed in recent times. And, you know, I can see political parties definitely reversing from those positions.
Well, and Sinn Féin, I mean, in Northern Ireland, of course, they supported puberty blockers for all, people under the age of 18. I'd be surprised if they don't support it down south as well, which surprises me. And I think that's not a good vote getter for Sinn Féin. Anyway, listen, it's an interesting conversation, and I think one that we'll hear more of. Padraig Tobin, you're running in the election, of course, and so will your candidates as leader of AIM 2. The election coming up probably end of October, start of November sometime, most likely. Definitely before March, anyway. And hopefully it'll be good to see you not just be a one-person party anymore or a one-TD party. Hopefully, what's your estimate? Are you hoping for a few more?
Well, we have 9 elected reps at the moment in terms of the councillors as well. And I've no doubt that I will be joined by a number of extra TDs at this election. I think we'll be challenging for seats in at least 7 constituencies across the country, which I think, you know, if we can get a good team of focused people who will stand up for what they believe in, and I have no doubt that that can make a change in the way the country's been run. You know, our position on the referendum that went by, I believe, led to significant changes
Absolutely.
In the establishment parties in the last number of months.
I think for a one TD party, yeah, I think for a one TD party, you've been a force to be reckoned with over the last 4.5 years. So I think going forward, if you can get a few more in there, Padder, I think you'll do incredibly well as a party, and you can only grow from there. Listen, thank you very much indeed, and I appreciate you coming on the air and talking to us today.
Sure, Mila Marcus, thanks, Niall. Appreciate it.